You are listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast. Welcome to this episode of Kapiti Poets, funded by the Creative Communities Scheme via Kapiti Coast District Council, by the New Zealand Poetry Society, and by generous donors via the boosted crowdfunding platform. I'm your host, Ingrid Prosser, performance poet from Paraparaumu, and I'm excited to welcome to the studio today Donna Peters, who lives in Ōtaki. Donna is a leading light in the Poetry in Ōtaki group, which meets monthly on a Friday morning. That's where we first met, on a bright winter's day last July. She impressed me as a twinkling-eyed, energetically communicative lady with a newly born passion for expressing herself through poetry. She is also the author of a book about Club Latino in Wellington. Thank you so much for coming in to share with us, Donna.
My pleasure, Ingrid. I'm very flattered to be chosen.
Wonderful. I hope you don't mind me asking, how old were you when you began writing poetry and what led you to do so?
I was very old. It was in May 2022 and I was 78 years old then. And it's never too late to start writing poetry if you fancy it. I was led to it by a friend and poet, Philip, who wanted to start a poetry group during the COVID times.
Yes.
And originally we called ourselves the Pandemic Poets. It had never occurred to me that I could ever actually write a poem. So at our first meeting, I read aloud one by my favourite poet, John Donne. Philip later persuaded me to try writing one of my very own. And after reading an article about the effects of lockdowns and how dead it seemed out there, I took some of that writer's words and turned them into a poem called Out There. And Phil liked it, and I was away.
Excellent, excellent. And were you writing poems quite frequently?
Well, after that?
Yes.
Well, because we met once a month, I always tried to have one every month.
Yes.
I haven't always managed that, but sometimes I've had two or three a month when I get inspired. I did sort of get into the swim.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
At least one poem a month sounds very good when you're only new to poetry.
Well, it's sort of like if I hadn't had that meeting every month, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Yes. Well, I'm very glad that that happened then. Yes, absolutely. So you were reading poetry when you were growing up, I think.
Well, my mother was actually quite keen on poetry when we were young, and she used to read us sort of children's poems, you know, things from Robert Louis Stevenson and A.A. Milne and things like that. So I always grew up with that, but I didn't really write poetry when I was young at all. I was at school, I was more interested in writing short stories, little stories, or even drama. I like drama, and I'd write little playlets and things like that.
Yes.
And, I was more interested in drama, really, than poetry.
So were your plays performed at school?
No. No. Nothing like that. No.
Yes. I wrote a little play at primary school with a friend. We were about 10. And it was called The Santa Napping of Santa.
The Santa Napping? That's a good one.
Which we performed at the end of year, because obviously we wrote it
for
Christmas. Because he couldn't be kidnapped because he was a Santa, you see.
No, he couldn't be kidnapped. He had to be Santa Napped. Very good, I get that.
Yeah, so that was fun to do that.
Yeah.
So when you left school, you became an English teacher.
Yes, because English was my best subject always at school. I wasn't much good at maths and science and things like that. So I did like languages, though. So when I got an opportunity to learn languages at secondary school, I did the usual French and German. Yeah. And I didn't learn Spanish until I actually went to Spain. But during my English teaching days, I taught a lot of poetry, of course, and also Spanish. I actually did my thesis on the poetry of Federico García Lorca, who's, I don't know if you know Federico García Lorca.
Well, I obviously know his name, but
Lorca is what we normally call him, just Lorca.
Yeah. I have to confess I've not
He's probably more famous for his plays in the greater world.
Yeah.
But I did, my thesis was on his gypsy poems. He wrote a lot about gypsies.
Right.
Yeah, really very evocative and musical type of poetry.
Yes.
I really liked his poetry. And when I was studying poetry at university, I also liked a lot of poems except for Milton and long poems like Paradise Lost.
Yes, yes.
So mainly my poems are short. I like short poems. And that's one of the reasons I like John Donne, because
the metaphysicals,
that's they were short, the poems and sonnets and things like that.
Yes, I can completely understand.
Yeah, I like sonnets. They're short.
Yes.
They have a form. I like something that's got a bit of a form and
yeah,
beginning, middle and end and that's it. Like some sort of object and with a form.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah, I quite like the romantics too.
Yeah.
I really liked Coleridge's poems, particularly Kublai Khan and the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, the sounds and things in those really get to me. I'm not at all musical, but I do like the sounds of words. I'm very keen on the sounds of words, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's sort of, I like, in a way it's sort of drama again, isn't it? It's performance, like you do, performance poetry, and
that's
it's got to be spoken to me. I can't, on a piece of paper, it's a bit dead, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just like, it's the invitation to treat in legal terms, isn't it? In contract law.
Yeah. No, it's
well,
not.
Let's hear your first poem now.
Ah, well, this one is called The Crucible, and it's sort of actually about poets and how poets are sort of, not so much encouraged, but formed during hard times, like the recent hard times we've had over COVID.
Yes.
So, alrighty. The Crucible. From that recent crucible, crushed by cruelty, pressured by persecution, came poets, fired by the wonder of a world so changed. What words were left to shape this world, when words themselves lost their shape? That old Oxford Book of Words declares, a crucible's a melting pot, or severe trial. Our lot in life, I fear. And yet nature shows, as intense heat and pressure grows, changing dross to gloss it goes. Dull black carbon transforms to crystal clear white gems. So I say, from our crucible of pressure and pain came small glitterings of truth and hope, brave hope. Our poet's words can change the world again.
Yes, thank you. Yes, very heartfelt.
Well, yes, it was rather in those times, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I love the alliteration,
especially
those first few lines.
Alliteration. Yeah, I'm quite keen on alliteration because I sort of fell in love with the Anglo-Saxon sagas and their head rhyme. That was what got me interested in alliteration, rather than end rhyme, which I do like. You got to use end rhyme sometimes, but I don't like regular end rhyme.
Yes,
because it starts to sound like doggerel.
I understand. There's a line, and if you cross that line,
it's very it's very tricky, isn't it?
You can,
you know. I don't want to write doggerel.
No, absolutely not. I am also a fan of Anglo-Saxon poetry, as listeners to this program will have heard already this series. So a theme running through this series of Capiti Poets is the consideration of what makes a poem a poem. And I'm particularly interested in what you think makes a poem a good poem.
Ah, yes. Well, I had to think about this quite a bit. I think a good poem is one that actually works, and it sort of works as an entity, entire of itself, as John Donne said.
Yes, indeed.
I think it is the ultimate human communication. It's a soul-to-soul communication.
Mm.
But what makes it actually a good poem? The poet has to use the power of language to evoke feelings, ideas and visions in the audience, similar to those held inside the poet's own mind. And to be a good poem, it needs to chime strongly with the shared experiences of the human condition. So although it is the poet's unique experience, the poet must choose the right words to evoke similar experiences in the audience. That's not necessarily easy. The essence of each word is vitally important to a poem's purpose, and the words that don't add to this need to be culled. And that's hard to do if it's a favourite word of yours. There are an infinite number of right techniques that a poet can use to colour the poem and to evoke the right feelings and images. But I'm not going to prescribe something.
No, indeed.
I think a poem is ultimately a good one if the audience responds by laughter or tears or even just a stunned silence.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the thoughts that came to me while you were saying those things was, how does the poet know what the right words are?
Ah, that's the rub.
I
always read my poems out aloud to myself and then to my long-suffering husband.
Yes.
And if they don't seem to work as I intended, I change things until they do seem to work.
Yes, so until things sort of fall into place.
Sort of gel, and you think, aha, that's it. And reading my poems out aloud really shows up the flaws, any flaws that come out. And even preparing for this interview, I reread my poems aloud several times and I had to tweak a word or two even after all this time.
Yes, it's interesting. So the poem that you just read, you added in, I can tell you later, you added in a word at a particular point and I said yes.
Yes.
Now that makes it better. It makes it more quickly understood.
Yes.
Because it was a point that had, when I read it through myself, just caught me a little bit. Because I think,
didn't
that
quite
doesn't
flow, did it?
Yes, no, didn't
so
quite
I just
flow.
Added that.
And so then you got the flow. And I do think that flow is a really important aspect
Flow
of poetry.
Particularly if it's going to be read aloud and performed, it has to flow. It's
absolutely
like music, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, because there's a pulse. There's a pulse to it. I think there are lots of things that contribute to the flow.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't mean by that that it has to be in a particular meter or using particular rhyme or anything like that, because there are all sorts of things that created. That's why I'm having such fun talking about what makes a poem in this series. Because there are so many elements.
That's right.
That
and I had to
poetry.
Learn all those elements because I had to teach them, didn't I?
Yes.
but there's, you know, I don't like rigid rules, really. I just like things that sound right. If it sounds right to me and it flows and it strikes the right note. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but I can't really sort of give a prescription for how to do it. You can't, not poetry by numbers or anything.
No, indeed. I think it's a matter of working at it. And yes, you learn various things, but then you have to try them out and find how those things are going to work for you. And if there's something you need to say in your unique way, because we're all unique. And it's not working if you follow this rule or that rule or the other suggestion. Then if you keep at it, you will find your own, each of us will find our own way. And that's right. Where the magic can begin to happen.
Well, that's what I find when I'm in this group and people are reciting their little poems. And I think, oh, that's so unique to that person. It's it's like a little gem coming from that person's mind. And yet that person has managed to connect with my mind and my experiences. And that's magical.
It is magical. It is magical. Well, shall we hear your next poem now?
Oh, yes. This one. You chose this one, didn't you?
I did, from the ones you sent me, yes.
Yes, well, I wrote this poem. I got brave because another person in the group read out a sad poem about her traumatic incident in her past. And I thought, well, if she can do it, I can grapple with this. I could manage it. So I bared my little trauma from over 60 years ago.
Yes.
And which I found still hurt when I wrote it in 2024. Yes, and some older listeners may remember what a big deal long-distance calls used to be.
Toll calls.
Toll calls, yes.
Yeah.
This one's called Long-Distance Calling. From a long distance, he calls, as I, curled on the couch, clutch close the soft words whispered in my ear. My dear, my love, can't wait to hold you tight in my embrace again against my heart. Till tomorrow, sweet dreams, tomorrow our lives begin together at last, tomorrow. Packed and ready, it's today. The day I fly to my love, my new life, a long way away. Hurry, car door slam shut. But what's that ringing inside? Wait a tick, a click unlocks the door. Just in time, hello. That voice again, my love, to wish me well. Safe journey. No. Don't come, don't love you any more. Cold voice, cold heart, I freeze, I'm numb. Gone my dreams, my love, gone.
Oh,
so sad.
So sad.
It was.
Yes.
But I'm a big girl now.
Yeah. And it's a good thing. It can not, even after all this remove of time, it can still be a very good thing to deal with things like that, can't it? Just a little bit more closure, perhaps.
Yeah, writing things down does help. I wrote a whodunit, and the person that we murdered in the whodunit was one of my ex-husbands. Doesn't that sound terrible? But it did help me to sort of get rid of a few ghosts and things, you know.
Yes,
put it in its place.
Absolutely.
It was a cosy whodunit. It wasn't a nasty one at all.
You've lived on the Kapiti Coast for a long time in Ōtaki and before that Raumati South. How do you feel living here in this environment contributes to your poetry?
Ah, well, I love the sea and it's a very relaxed atmosphere on the coast. So it's easier to sort of get in the zone to write. And, you know, I've spent quite a lot of my time on the Kapiti Coast writing.
Yes, great.
I went to a couple of writing classes in Ōtaki by Renee. I don't know if you remember Renee.
Right,
yeah, she used to run classes.
Yeah.
That was the whodunit and my life story.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But the only thing that's ever been that I've written that's been published was the Latin Club history. That did finally get published.
Yes, That's great. It's wonderful to have that.
Yeah.
I must say, I've already asked you, haven't I, if I can read your whodunit, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, the whodunit. Yes, I'll get it to you. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That would be really great. So we mentioned Poetry in Ōtaki earlier, the group which started during the COVID period and which is still going, and you are now organising that. Mm. So will you tell the listeners where and when you meet and how can people come along?
Well, we meet every third Friday of the month from 10:30 a.m. to about 11:30. Yeah. Sometimes we go over time.
A bit.
Yes.
In the supper room of the Ōtaki Memorial Hall, which is adjacent to the Ōtaki Library.
Great. So anybody can just turn up at 10:30 on the third Friday of each month.
That's right. So just turn up and bring your poems, or just come and listen, or you can bring other people's poems. You don't have to write your own.
Mm. Mm.
Well, not at first anyway.
Not at first. That's right. Everybody will be encouraged to write.
Yeah,
at some
they
point.
Will be, we hope encouraged. Yes.
Yeah. That's great. And so, obviously, the having the group has been important to you during your development as a poet. It's persuaded you to write, kept you writing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's completely, entirely responsible for my late blooming as a poet. And I'm very grateful for all the encouragement that these people, particularly Philip, gave me. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And we're going to be talking to Phil in
soon.
In the next interview. Lovely. So let's have another of your poems now.
Okay, now this one is called Crossroads, and it was written last year for the National Poetry Day. Our group set the theme of Ōtaki, and as I'd been regularly passing a plaque in the vicinity of the library, it's a plaque to the memory of a revered Ōtaki resident, and it set me thinking. It's situated at the crossroads by the library, so this seemed appropriate to call it the crossroads, and it's about Ōtaki's past, present, and future. Okay, crossroads. At the crossroads of our town, an old plaque stands proud, praising a woman of renown. Yes, in those days, they knew what a woman was. Now, we're at a loss, and she no less a doctor that our town did bless. But that was then, this is now, when her profession's blighted by a scam, her very sex dismissed, her race steeped in shame. Should we let such blatant reality-bending besmirch her name? No. This town was built by blending, not bending the truth, not breaking bonds by race, sex, or scam to split our souls asunder and push one side under. Together, persons white and brown worked hard to make their future town a place of hope and love for all. Witness my grandson, dark and tall, standing straight against the 3% in Parliament and their media mates who say his bronze skin I should hate. His eyes of blue, his smiling face, topped by black mats of curls. Oh, he really does attract the girls. Now, standing at the crossroads, he and his mates too. Which way to go? What to do?
Thank you very much. I remember hearing you read that poem at the National Poetry Day event last year.
Which I didn't win, of course.
Well, here you are. Now you're having it on the radio.
Yes, fame at last.
Great to hear it again. Well, it's been really super to talk with you, Donna. Thank you very much for coming into the studio. In a moment, we'll finish the programme with one more poem. Firstly, I'd like once more to say thank you very, very much to our generous and supportive funders, the Kapiti Coast District Council for the Creative Community Scheme funding, which comes from Creative New Zealand, the New Zealand Poetry Society, and individuals via the boosted crowdfunding platform. So tell us about the poem we're going to hear now.
Ah, well, this one is called Plum Crazy. And it's, well, I like to inject a bit of humour now and then into my poems. And also I have a number of poems that I call my nature poems. Well, this January, nature gave me something phenomenal to write about. Plum Crazy. In spring, white stars against dark boughs, the blossoms glow. Nature's beauty, heralding nature's summer bounty. Now in January, hurtles down an avalanche of purple bombs that splat and stain the patio. Frantically, we pick and pluck plums, quick before the birds can peck and plunge their beaks deep into the sweet red flesh, scattering purple plum stones, staining our pristine pavers. A scrubbing chore for another day. How I wish those feathered hordes would go away, would leave us in peace alone to harvest the fat red fruits unmarked, sink our teeth into their raw flesh. But no, it's all rush, rush to stew, to boil, make jam. We race to save nature's kindly bounty before those birds can have their way. It's hot, I'm tired, I'm very achy. After all, I'm over 80. Oh, those spring, pretty spring blossoms. It was just the other day. Nature's beauty beats nature's bounty now, I say.
You have been listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast.
This programme was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from New Zealand On Air.